You just missed my mother in her own house.
Come here. Kneel. Give me the water.
Try looking into that place where you dare not look. You will find me there staring back at you.
You mustn't speak!
Hey, everybody, welcome to a very special episode of the GeekCast Live podcast. I'm your host, GCR, and with me, as always,
Rob Bass.
Lloyd Christmas?
Modib.
Lisa, okay.
And Cartoon Joe.
And this is the, as promised, believe it or not, second part of our look at Dune. And this where the first one covered Dune, author Frank Herbert and his motivations and some themes and some flora and fauna of the novel Dune. This is going to concentrate on Dune, like on the screen. And we're going to cover, hopefully, to some extent, all aspects of Dune on the screen. There hasn't been many.
I think it's probably only been, like, including the latest ones, like maybe six attempts, I guess four semi-successful ones.
How
are you counting?
Well, so there's the two new ones. Villeneuve.
Oh, so you're counting, and you're not counting it as one project, you're counting it as two separate projects.
I mean, sure,
it is two separate movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
End list.
Now I see more how you're counting.
Right. So there's that one, then there's the miniseries that the BBC had. There's David Lynch's Dune, which is where I was very first introduced to Dune. And then the greatest movie never to be made, they call it, Jodorowsky's Dune, which I think is probably
like an acid trip.
Probably where we should start.
The most influential movie, the most influential film never produced.
That's a bold statement and a sentence.
I would agree with both of those.
Yeah, so earlier today I watched the documentary that they made about it and was absolutely blown away, first of all, by the scope of the project and how, because of the scope of the project, this lunatic Jodorowsky was able to convince so many incredible names at the time to sign on, many of whom were obscure at the time, but then would go on to be hugely famous. But I thought one of the things that he did that was really brilliant and sort of ties in. Sorry, there's so much to it. So I have so much to say. He had this vision of Dune where he took the book and he said, love the book, totally elevated my consciousness, totally changed the way I think about everything. I want to do a movie that's going to do the same. So he changes the ending so that all of the Fremen become Paul Atreides. Dune spontaneously terraforms into the paradise it was supposed to be. And then the planet itself becomes a conscious planet messiah flying off into the universe to spread life to all of everything, to all things.
How high was he?
Oh, my God. There was a scene in the documentary where he's talking about he invited one guy to come on to the project, and what they did was he answered the door. He's in like a nice suit. The guy's like expecting a lunatic. He sees like an academic scholarly type. He invites him in. They sit down. They smoke some marijuana that I think must have been laced with some kind of psychedelic, because he says, Alejandro looked at me so intensely, and then all of a sudden rays of light began to shine from his face. He de-aged 20 years, and I understood what he wanted from this project. And then all of a sudden he was his normal age again, still staring into my eyes, and he says, you're in the project.
Yeah, they dropped acid.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah, they definitely had something there.
Yeah. So he wants to create this thing that's going to do what the book did for him, and he wants it. He wants to use the medium of film to elevate the consciousness of the movie going audience. And the scope of the ambition was too big. Every movie studio turned them down, but what they did that was brilliant was they created this script that, you know, a traditional script is just writing. But because it was so ambitious and so big, they created a every scene was storyboarded shot for shot. And so you could see exactly what they wanted, exactly what they were imagining all the way through the entire film. And they included photographs of the concept art that H.R. Giger had put together. They included, you know, who's going to be doing the soundtrack here. You know, like the I think he said the Harkonnens in his mind were they were like a particular band that I suddenly can't remember the name of.
The Beatles.
It wasn't the Beatles or the Who.
Tangerine Dream.
Maybe. No, Dream. It wasn't that. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so
John
they
Cafferty
sent
in the Beaver Brown Band.
Pink Floyd.
That was my
Pink Floyd. It was Pink Floyd.
Ah,
that sounds
nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to pause you real quick. You didn't. What we're talking about now is you watched a documentary called Jodorowsky's Dune, which
yes.
you can find on HBO. And it is a documentary about Jodorowsky's wanting to be the first one to bring Dune to film in the
yes.
early 70s, correct?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes, that's exactly
okay.
right.
Okay.
Yes. And it was made like 23 years after the
David Lynch's Dune was.
Yes.
Right. Which we'll get to next.
Yeah. But so they put together this script that isn't a script as much as it's a graphic novel and send one copy to every movie studio. And by the way, these are so rare now that I believe one of them just sold for about $5 million.
That's insane. But also,
see, that's,
I'd
yeah,
probably
that's one of those things
to have one of those.
That's, I was just gonna say, that's one of those things where if I had just fuck you money.
Yeah,
I would have I'd be telling my publicist or my person or whatever, like, get me a copy of Jodorowsky's Dune novel, please. That'd be a thing. Mm-hmm. I'd want to own that, I think, above a lot of other things.
And that one Wu-Tang album.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Skrelly, and the rights that. To AIDS medicine. Let's just.
Yeah. Okay. If we could
take
also.
Everything from Skrelly. Let's take it from Skrelly.
Let's three. Plan Skrelly's assassination and then just steal his Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
The Rush. All right. So the Rush War. The full Rush War. I got you. Jodorowsky's Dune, the full Wu-Tang Rush album. War. Cure to AIDS and death for
and Skrelly's life.
Yeah. Perfect.
Hilarious.
So the Harkonnens were Pink Floyd.
The Harkonnens are Pink Floyd. They planned everything and presented it to the movie studios, and they only, I think they needed $15 million. They were down to their last $5 million that they needed to get to the end of their production for what they thought, what they budgeted. And so they went to every movie studio, and every movie studio was like, we've never done anything this big. We're kind of nervous that audiences won't like it. You know,
sci-fi
is there any
is
way
kind of a weird genre for us?
Yeah, it seems a little bit long. You know, could you get it down to like an hour and a half? And of course, Jodorowsky is a total madman, is like, fuck you. It could be 20 hours. I don't give a shit. You're not cutting my dream down to an hour and a half. I won't allow it. And so, of course,
you know,
they all say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, by all means, if you have a specific vision and you can't achieve it because it's, you know, you're too far apart, walk away. I really respect it. And the way that he talks about his understanding of film as art in that way is just honestly deeply inspiring and incredible. But
I have to know, yeah. Did it mention whether that was 15 million in like 1970s money or in
1970s money?
Jesus,
1970s money. Yeah, I don't know what that is now, but it's a lot.
Yeah, it's way more than that.
What's weird is, so 15 mil in 1970 is, what do you think, 300 mil now?
No,
probably.
What did they make the two Dunes for?
$450
million.
Holy crap. So $1 in 1970 is equivalent purchasing power to about $7.81 today.
Jesus. So 15 mil is.
So like 15 mil is like eight times that.
Yeah. I don't do maths. 60 million.
120 million.
120 million. Now look what what was the budget of the first Timothy Chalamet's Dune?
165 million.
I was going to say 150, probably.
So He wasn't off.
No. Much.
It kind of makes you sad. It's an equivalency. It would have been a risk then in 1970 to spend $15 million on a movie, and it probably wouldn't have made it back.
No, because
over time,
Lynch's Dune didn't even a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Lynch's Dune was post Star Wars. So maybe Jodorowsky's Dune could have been the first.
And that's
you're not wrong. Pop
to break the seal there.
Yeah,
and it would have been cool to see the
world like
early version of fucking Lucasfilm's art studio. What was that called? Where they built all the X-wings out of paper mache?
Skywalker Ranch.
Yes, to
talking about like
Industrial Light and Magic to make the paper mache worms and white worms. Oh,
hell yeah.
Would have been
like a macrame, which is my new rap name, by the way. I'll be known forever as Macrame Shai Halud.
Fuck yeah.
Are you gonna be Timothy Macrame?
Timothy
Macrame. That's a good one.
Thank you.
I mean, all the original Star Wars stuff was live action shot, you know, the story was built out, so that would have been kind of neat.
Well, and that's the other thing. They had figured out how they wanted to do all of the special effects that they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't think that they were going to have to invent anything after getting the funding. They just had to build it.
So,
we have a ready-made product. We only need $5 million to finish.
Because we just have to finish making the sets, making the things that we need to make.
Yep. Shooting the last scenes that we need to shoot.
I think so. There actually was things shot.
This is my impression. That's how it made it sound.
Wow. I wonder what that film is.
Yeah. Same.
One of the things I think you were trying to mention is the how all of this would have been pre-Star Wars.
Yep.
And how a lot of the concept art and concept story telling styles of Jodorowsky's Dune, we do end up getting to see in Hollywood. It is extremely influential in a lot of very influential films.
Yeah. So the movie studios, part of their concern is they'd never seen anything like it before. It was so ahead of its time that they just weren't ready for it. But you give somebody this show Bible and you let it marinate on a producer's desk for 5, 6, 7, 20, 30 years. And now when you hire somebody and they come in and say, hey, I'd like to do this, they go, oh, I've seen that. Check this out. And now that scene that was in Dune, in Jodorowsky's Dune, is now in, you name it. There's examples from the documentary range from like, there's scenes from Star Wars, Terminator, The Matrix, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Alien, of course.
And that's H.R. Geiger and Dan O'Brien.
Dan O'Brien is O'Bannon.
Yeah, I didn't think it was O'Bannon because I was thinking Bannon, that can't be right.
He's a douche.
Yeah. So yeah, Dan O'Bannon. Yes. But all that's the other thing is he puts together this stellar crew. And it's literally, I mean, it's like 12 guys and he calls them his warriors. And it's just, there was this feeling of like, you're wanting to create this messianic story and you literally surrounded yourself with 12 dudes who are going to be your champions or whatever, and your disciples and whatever. And they all go on to do other things and they take stuff that they did on Dune into the other things.
I saw a bit of this documentary and he was talking about the Harkonnen ship, which is shaped like this skull and like this death mask, and the tongue comes out of the mouth, and that's like the Harkonnen's landing ship.
And it eats the ships, and then you walk in.
And then when you realize that was his idea, and then he gave it to his concept guy, H.R. Geiger, who draws this up and makes it look like this head that has this tongue that comes out with like this ship with a tongue that comes out with a tiny ship on the tip of it. And then you realize that H.R. Geiger did the concept work for the aliens in Alien.
And for all of like fucking everything in Alien.
And you see this, xenomorph, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the tongue comes out and it's just a, not a tongue, but this other appendage comes out of its mouth and it's another mouth. And you realize that that's just Jodorowsky's
It's just the Harkonnen castle. The
Harkonnens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty fucking neat.
It's awesome. And it's just, yeah, it's just in a way, and this is my final point and I'm ready to move on to that. But in a way, his goal in doing this was to create this idea of elevated consciousness that passes on from Paul to the Fremen to the audience and then throughout the universe. And in a way, it took 40 years or whatever for this documentary to be made to tell us about it. But because of those show Bibles, because of all the people involved in the production, because of the impact that producing Dune had on the lives of all the people involved in it, he has touched basically all of sci-fi that has happened ever since.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. So in a way, he achieved his goal. It just, he didn't do it and it took 4 years.
Do you think him wanting to make Mick Jagger Fade Rotha is why they cast Sting in David Lynch's Dune?
I didn't consider that, but yeah, actually.
I do know.
So a couple of things that I wanted to touch on really quick related to this Dune was like the casting lineup. You mentioned Mick Jagger here, but like the casting lineup was insane. Orson Welles, Mick Jagger, David Carradine, Salvador Dali. I also...
What did they want Dali for?
The Emperor. Which honestly, perfect. Hell
and
yeah.
They each had such interesting, like, what's the word? Like, writers in their contracts. Dali would only do it if he could be the highest paid actor in Hollywood for this movie.
It reminded me of that scene in Armageddon where Bruce Willis is reading off all the demands of his oil rig guys to go on the mission. It's like they don't want to pay taxes ever again.
Yeah.
A bear wants a new motorcycle.
Yeah,
Orson Welles didn't want to go on set because he likes this restaurant. And so Jodorowsky said, what if I just hire this chef to be on set every
at
day?
All so times.
You can eat like you're always here. And Orson Welles was like, fine, I'll do it.
Well, slap my ass and call me Baron Harkonnen.
I'm pretty sure that Charlotte Rampling, who was the Reverend Mother of Mohiam in the New Dune, she was going to be in it. And then found out that there was going to be a scene where the Harkonnen soldiers shit all over Arakeen after killing Leto. And she decided that she was not going to be a part of a movie that had like 10,000 extras shitting on set. Yeah. Which, I mean, probably a good move, but you know.
So
full circle, she found her way back in the end.
With that visual in mind, if Hollywood did for this movie, the making of this movie, like they did with when Franco and those guys did The Disaster Artist, the making of the movie The Room with Tommy Wiseau, if you did a Hollywood take on the attempt to make Jodorowsky's Dune, would the scene... Can you imagine going to the theater and watching that scene of 10,000 extras taking shits all over the stage in a James Franco's Jodorowsky's Dune?
You know what? Sure.
I'm just saying, saying I'm not into it. I'm saying I'm really into it.
I'm saying that I haven't fully, I don't know if I can fully comprehend that at that scale.
I don't know if I'm high enough for it, but I would like to be.
Was there no showing my ignorance here, was there no Fayed Rautha in the new movie?
Fayed Rautha?
Yeah. Oh no, that was the naked mole rat looking
that was
guy.
Albino Elvis.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, got it. It's funny that somebody said naked mole rat and the other person said albino Elvis, and they both clicked the exact same way for me. And they led me right to, yeah,
right Austin, to Austin Butler
or whatever.
That's his name.
I see. Because he's only billed in the second movie. That's why I couldn't find it. I was trying to connect the dots because I don't remember much about the David Lynch's Dune other than, of course, my.
Well, one very hot take, Rob. What are the you were going to talk about? And I don't know what it had to do with Jodorowsky before we move on to Lynch, but you keep mentioning every time I mentioned Jodorowsky's Dune, you mentioned the Meta Barons, and I don't know what.
Yeah, know what so that yes. It was. It is the like the taking all of the like storyboards and scripts and such and compiling it into a more cohesive like graphic novel series. It's really weird and fascinating. You can definitely see that there's obviously a lot of influence from Dune in it, but it's, look, I don't know. It's got a lot of like unique aspects in its own. The main story is told from the perspective of two bickering little robots, and it really kind of evokes a 3PO and the R2 feel, which is pretty fascinating. The Emperor of the Galaxy is sterile. So they have to do some sort of like genetic fuckery so that him and his wife can have a child. So they end up having a conjoined twin that is both male and female, and they live in some sort of egg, and they are the Emperor of the Known Galaxy. The titular Meta Baron. It's like a line of dudes who are kind of part Jedi, part cyborg, part Paul Atreides, who mutilate the shit out of themselves. It's so like it's so weird, and I really enjoy it, but I'm not.
And I was cursing up Madman.
I don't know how to. I don't know how to feel about it yet. I'm trying to piece the story together still. It feels definitely more of a spectacle than like a cohesive like story or a particularly deep thinking piece. It doesn't feel like Dune or like going through it and just being, you know, challenged as you're reading it or trying to digest it. But it definitely plays up all of the really fucking weird aspects of the Dune universe. And well, it's real fucking weird. So it's got that going for it.
Where do you
recommend it?
Where would I get this?
I'm pretty sure that you could pick up, I'm pretty sure you could pick it on Amazon or any of like the major bookstores. I think the Barnes and Nobles might even be able to get you copies of it. And I think that there are like, I want to say like 10 different omnibuses, and they're pretty fucking meaty.
No shit.
Yeah. So like it could be, reading material for a while if you were invested in it, but, it's very fascinating. At some point in time, somebody gets, inherited a clone of the last living horse, but then pirates steal it, and then there's this big quest to go and retrieve the horse. That's cool.
Incredible.
it's fascinating.
That was a sentence.
It was a fucking sentence. It was a fucking experience, is what it was.
Okay, so Jodorowsky doesn't make his movie. Dune sits dormant. Star Wars comes out and it's a fucking hit. Someone says, get David Lynch on the phone. We need to do Dune and ride this sci-fi wave of this movie that some guy in France has been wanting to make for a while, but don't worry about him. Get the weirdest.
He's in a K-hole right now.
He's in a K-hole. get one of the weirdest motherfuckers on the planet and let's have him make a movie. And this is where my very first ever exposure to Dune was Kyle MacLachlan's David Lynch's Dune. And I don't know if that's the best way to get somebody hooked on the series.
That was my favorite comment from Jodorowsky about it was he was like, David Lynch, he could do it. David Lynch is an artist. And I was horribly depressed because I felt like, you know, my dream, he stole my dream, and he might do it better than I could do it. And I wasn't going to see the film. I didn't want to see the film because I thought if I see this film, I'm just going to die. But my sons said, Father, we're warriors. We're going to go see the film. And they dragged me to the film, and I walked in like I was walking on death row. But then it was terrible. And I was so happy.
It is this film has its a friend of the show, One Arm Jake, went and saw both Dunes. That the recent ones, really liked them, likes this show better, likes David Lynch's Dune better. He can't tell brand. Me, he can't tell me why. He just, I think it has
it's because to, of
I think
Toto. It,
I think it's a nostalgia thing. I think it's he really likes Dune. He loves H.R. Geiger. I think he just liked the fucking weirdness of it. But I gotta admit,
it is.
As a kid watching too. This in the late 80s, I didn't even know what the fuck I was watching. It is
much weird. Slower.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's not exciting.
However, start off with one of the only depictions of a guild navigator that's been brought to screen, which I think is fucking fantastic. Just the giant fish man in the glow globe. It's pretty awesome. I really like that. There are a lot of aspects of Dune that I think that Lynch's Dune like really nails. And it's some of those weird stuff, like the navigators. I really like the design for the worms in that. I think that those have been become so fucking iconic across. I mean, everything. They're, you know, the worms in Beetlejuice even borrow a lot of their design from the 84 Dune.
Didn't know that. Makes sense though.
Oh yeah.
It is a, if you go just a run down the cast list. Bradley Dourif, who played Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings, Kyle MacLachlan as Paul Atreides. He goes without Virginia Madsen. Everett McGill was Stilgar. Let's see here. Jürgen Prochnow as Duke Leto Atreides. Jürgen Prochnow is awesome.
It's a good choice.
Fucking Sir Patrick Stewart is in this movie.
Gurney Halleck,
right? Sting.
That's got to be the best Gurney too.
That is it is an incredible pick for Gurney. I think that while I love Josh Brolin, his Gurney Halleck is just too dry. I really like Gurney Halleck as like the troubadour warrior. I think he did better in the set. I think it was better in the second one than the first.
He was better in the second than the first. The first, he is too angry stoic,
too steely. Like I am smiling,
just okay. Smile. Just all smile, right, Gurney. Fuck. We already talked about it. Sting was in this as Fade Rotha, and that's Austin Butler and Sting's Fade Rotha are two completely different characters, even though they're the same.
I think that Austin Butler, I love Austin Butler, Sting.
Fade Max Rotha. Von Sydow is in this movie, which I don't remember Max Von Sydow being in it, but he's cast in it. He's Dean Kings. Stockwell from Quantum Leap. Sean Young before she lost her fucking mind.
I hate to give Momoa any credit, but I think he might have actually somehow stumbled into being the superior Duncan Idaho between him and Kirkland Brand Vince Vaughn from the original.
I think that he is a solid Duncan Idaho. Kirkland, I'm not going to lie.
You couldn't have done better than a Kirkland Brand Vince Vaughn for my guy Dick Jordan.
No. For the money, it's okay. It's solid, but
he was Vince Vaughn before Vince Vaughn was Vince Vaughn,
right? The trendsetter in his own right.
Interesting. How did Momoa land as the best we've ever had?
Low bar.
Now you said something earlier today, Nick. Hot take that your boy Kyle MacLachlan is a better Paul Atreides than Timothy Chalamet. I think you said he would body him
Yeah.
And I don't know if that
elaborate on that.
I don't know if that meant body him in the sense of like if they were to fight or body
him
like metaphysically in the Eminem as an actor.
Sense of when you have a
fan fiction.
No, what like he's the Eminem in any sort of collaboration where it's known that if you ask Eminem to be on one of your rap records, you're going to get bodied. That's my man, Method Man. Made me hip to that, and I researched it, and it's apparently true. So yes, as obviously Kyle MacLachlan is the Eminem of the Frank Herbert verse, which I think goes without saying. I don't hate Chalamet, but I'm going to give it to MacLachlan. He's got a little bit more. His eyes are a little more haunted, and his frame is a little more filled out. That's the extent of my analysis.
That is true. He is.
Oh yeah.
He has a bigger frame.
Chalamet has the body of a boy.
I don't hate Chalamet. I don't either.
He just looks like he'll never grow up.
Right. I don't think he's the pulse of what makes the new Dune like really good. I think I honestly would give it. I would give it more to the Fremen characters and actors.
Sure, like Javier Bardem. I think
more so than Chalamet. So yeah, that was the basis of that hot take.
I think that I could at least see your argument for that. I don't know if I agree with it, but I will say that Rebecca Ferguson, as far as I'm concerned, is just a straight upgrade for Lady Jessica. I'm sure that is
fire and can do no wrong.
Not controversial, even in the slightest. I am not pushing any boundaries with this opinion, but perfection.
No, you didn't put yourself out there with that lukewarm take there.
It had to be said, though.
I think it's an even tie for the portrayal of Baron Harkonnen between Skarsgård's and the one from David Lynch's Dune.
I'm gonna give it Kenneth McMillan.
Yeah, that guy's got a.
Because neither one Jerry do a Gergich. Bad job. They're both disgusting.
And
yeah, dark Jerry Gergich, I think, gets the edge over the current version. Yeah, I think so. I mean, slightly.
I'm kind of with you. Like I do really like Stellan Skarsgård. Like I like all of the Harkonnen aesthetic in the new movies. But whenever you want to pivot to
our fucking walkthrough of Dune 2, I'm ready because you're talking about some things that I have been needing to get off my chest for like a month.
All right. I'm ready whenever you are, I suppose. No, but I think there's a lot of color and just greasy vileness that comes with Lynch's portrayal for the Harkonnens that I think is really lost in like the more toned down black and white evil Harkonnens in the newer ones. Like I do like how they're portrayed aesthetically on scene in the story. I think that they're great, but I think that they do kind of lose something compared to like either in the books or the older.
The difference is they are in Villeneuve's Dune, they are evil. Mm-hmm. In Lynch's Dune, they are vile.
Yes.
I think
that, I think that is great. Like very
I think succinct. that's how I would describe them. They're just they're really not much different, but the way they're portrayed is just that little bit different of aesthetic. And David Lynch's Dune to me, in comparison to the new ones, David Lynch's Dune is for like teenagers, and Denis Villeneuve's movies are for adults. I'm not disparaging either one of them by saying that. It just seems like the tone Like, tonally, it's made for fucking people who want to go see a masterpiece. Dune 1 was a good movie. Dune 2 is a fucking masterpiece. And I don't know how else to describe it other than, in comparison, it makes Lynch's Dune look like a movie for children.
Lynch's Dune is for lovers. It's like the Virginia.
It's the Virginia of Dune.
The Virginia of Dunes.
Yeah.
Which you know I think what? Also I'll allow really that.
That's a show title. Saying. Let me. I gotta put that.
Different from the Dunes of Virginia.
The Virginia of Dunes.
Yeah, very flat. Not eye catching. The Dunes of Virginia.
So the first Dune movie was like 17 years ago with Denis Villeneuve. It was Timothy Chalamet. I remember when it was. When they started announcing the cast, it seemed like for a solid 60 days, every day they were like, and Josh Brolin as Gurney Halleck. And you were like, fuck, who isn't? I remember like
who the
people,
fuck isn't
people saying movie? Like, hey, I might be in Dune.
Right.
I don't know yet. I'm waiting to hear.
Right. Shit, I just found out I'm in Dune.
That I'm also in Dune. It's what made me, I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's what made me decide I finally had to sit down and finish reading Dune. I didn't want to go into this not knowing. I figured if I couldn't finish the book and they were going to make as true an adaptation as they could, I wouldn't understand the movie if I just went in cold. So I finished reading the book. And I'm glad I did because knowing the characters, some motivations, stuff like that. I thought it made that movie unbelievable. And it came out during COVID. It wasn't a direct release to HBO, I don't believe.
Well, what they did was they simul-released.
Okay, right.
Yeah. It came out on HBO and in theaters at the same time.
It's the reason I bought my sound system for my TV. Mm-hmm. Was for this movie. I wanted to make sure I watched it.
You can hear the from all directions.
As close to his theater as I
want
my get.
Neighbors to hear it. I want the entire neighborhood well, that's to hear what it. I want the next city over to hear it.
It was as up as my system would allow it. And I wasn't appreciated by my family for that day. But it had to be done.
They'll get over it.
So it had to be done.
I already forgot.
That you, movie, the in-laws, the meth squatter in the outbuilding. Meth everyone squatter. Heard it.
I can't kick him out because he's got rights.
Right.
He gets mail now. Yeah. It's junk mail, but that's how you get squatter's rights.
Yes. Sucks. So. No, like the lineup and the cast for the new Dunes are ridiculous. I mean, Batista, David Dismalkin as, is that how you saw that? Dismalkin? Yeah,
Dismalkin. All right, I don't know if it's a kit or a sh.
Excellent. Perfect. Jason Momoa, Oscar Isaac, Zendaya. Yeah, like it's fucking stacked. I don't know. Like, I really enjoy pretty much everything about it. I think there are a lot of great aesthetic choices for it. I feel like that. Compared to either the BBC Dune or Lynch's Dune, I feel like it is more monotone in its use of colors. Like I feel like it's very muted in its use of colors. It's mm-hmm. I think that it does a great job at like setting the tone, as it were, and like just everything in this place is just sandy and dusty and it all looks fucking orange.
But it's not like Marvel parking lot tan though. It's mm-mm. I feel like all of the colors are very intentional and saturated.
Sure.
They're just it's just a very limited palette.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think that they do some fucking phenomenal things with their use of color, lack thereof, in part two.
I think God damn it, that's what made the first movie really good and the second one a masterpiece was when they switched to Harkonnenville.
Yeah, the Giedi Prime scenes in the second one.
Whoa.
I gotta drop off. I'll try and jump back in a minute.
Bye.
Whoa.
Is what? Very anti-Giddy Prime.
No, he doesn't like it. He didn't like it.
It's the Conan's, you know.
When it goes to that scene and everything's in black and white, and they do like these like greasy fireworks.
Yeah, like that they look like
almost like ink blots, like a Rorschach test. I was like blown the fuck away by the sudden absence of all color and having it make complete sense in context.
Yes.
That was unbelievable to me. That made me go, like, I caught my breath at that point of the movie.
It's probably the only movie that I've ever watched that immediately made me think of Metropolis from the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay,
it evokes, like, because it's also in black and white, and it's got a lot of that like massive, larger than life machinery scaling structures, and it just felt like incredibly evocative of that, and I don't know if I've ever seen another movie really like harken that hard back to that, which I thought was really fascinating. That's one of my, like, I don't know, all time. This was a great movie. This is probably one of the reasons why film should continue to exist as a medium forever, because Metropolis is fucking great. So I didn't know you
were a Metropolis guy.
Yeah.
Metropolis guy.
Believe it or not, actually, yeah. I think we had
we've talked about it.
We definitely had, I think, Jason Piles or somebody on and talking about like our top films of all time. And like, I said it then and I swear to God, I'll stand by it now. Metropolis deserves everybody's watching at least once if you like film. I thought that the Harkonnen stuff and their use of colors and monochrome there was just bewildering. Really good shit.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they go back between like that during any of the outdoor scenes or cutting into some of the hallways in the buildings and stuff and bring the color back in. It's interesting seeing them be able to do that so seamlessly.
It was that scene. It was the slight change that he made with Chani.
Mm-hmm. I really like those changes.
I thought that change made complete sense to me.
Yeah, because I feel like in the books, Chani can very easily come off as just kind of like the loyal warrior wife who just loves Paul Muad'Dib and like is very deep in the cup.
She's like a true believer.
Yeah.
One of like a quiverful wife.
Yeah. And I think that this gives her way more depth in character.
Makes her a fucking character.
I really like the changes. I'm very interested to see how that would affect the story in the future.
It makes her a character. It gives her something to do. It gives the audience somebody to ride along with. Right. And I think it drives the point of the story home way harder than the book did, which is why Herbert ended up having to write Messiah in the first place.
Yes.
Well, it's going to be interesting.
I think Noemi's done a good job of explaining that.
It's going to be interesting to see how her character unfolds in Dune Messiah, or I don't know if they'll call it Dune Messiah or just Dune 3. I don't know, but to see how
they call it Messiah, and I hope it's a two-parter.
To see Messiah 1, to see how that changes the story at all. The movie's not without it's, I don't think it's flawless, but the things I'm going to list right now that I think maybe somebody might perceive as me saying are flaws are not. They're not flaws. They're just two things that stood out to me that were like interesting. One, the very last time that Javier Bardem says Lisan al-Gaib,
mm-hmm.
after the fight at the end. I laughed out loud in the theater. It caught me so fucking off guard. His delivery, his that line read is like,
he was fucking holding that one in.
I don't know enough about how Denis Villeneuve makes movies. If he, I don't think he's one of those guys that makes actors take like take 77 and shit like that. Or if he gives actors, if they're allowed to improvise, or if his script is his script and that's how I want you to film it. Sure. I don't know. I don't know what my what I want the answer to be either, because part of me thinks if he wrote that in like, no, you need to say it like this. That's a fucking awesome choice. If he just let Javier Bardem run with the line and said, I'm going to leave that one in.
That's the one.
That's a choice.
Yeah.
I laughed out fucking loud in the theater. And this isn't a comedy by any stretch of the fucking... Mm-mm. So that was one thing that I thought. What did you guys think about?
Well, so
that, I mean, it's memeable.
I think that one, it's memeable. I think that two, I think that they did a good job at, I don't know. I felt like they portrayed a lot of Stilgar's, like his radicalization, his like falling in behind like the shadow of Paul and becoming a more like more of a religious zealot, right? Like starting to idolize Paul, starting to like, yes, Muad'Dib, no Muad'Dib. Let's go on a jihad, Muad'Dib.
come on, we're going jihading.
I think that...
see Muad'Dib jihad.
Yeah, I think that trying to... make that appear more comedic, I think helps express a little bit more about like, you should kind of feel sorry for this guy to some degree.
Yeah.
Because like, I mean, in the first movie, Stilgar, like he comes off as a badass. This is a bad motherfucker. He comes in, he spits on somebody's table. He says a couple of quippy things and
don't fuck with me.
Swishes cape and then goes out to the desert. Like, oh, this dude's fucking hardcore. Cool. And then by the time that the end of the second movie comes around, everything like Paul farts into the wind and it's Lisan Al Gaib.
But who hasn't said, Jesus Christ?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think
he farted to the north, just as the prophecy said,
just as it was written. And I think that they do a good job at kind of showing you, like, yeah, look how fucking funny this is because. Like, I don't know.
It's absurd.
It was absurd. Yeah, it is absurd.
Not to get overtly political, but it played into that. So he believed Paul was Lisan Al Gaib. Mm-hmm. Everything Paul did, therefore he did because he's Lisan Al Gaib.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He didn't the do circular it for any
logic.
Other, it's the circular logic of it, of the it's almost QAnon.
Sure, he gave himself brain rot and we got to watch it in live action.
There's actually a couple times where he in the movie Paul does something and he just looks at other friend and he's like, huh, Lisan Al Gaib, maybe, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You tell me, I don't know. Yeah. And it's like you could see like I know that guy.
Yeah.
And so I think that's shit like that is what made, I honestly think that Dune Part Two is a fucking masterpiece. The other thing, the other decision is making the fucking emperor of all things space, Christopher fucking Walken.
What a choice.
Is a choice.
You know, when you cast him, you're going to make him say Lisan Al Gaib. You're going to make him say Muad'Dib. And
as many times as you can,
you have to, right? Because to hear him say, you must be Paul Muad'Dib, it's like, yes, there's a series of phrases and words in this movie that I needed Christopher Walken to say anyway. Like, yeah. If it was a Jimmy Fallon bit where they just gave Christopher Walken words to say, one of them would have been Lisan Al Gaib.
Paul Usul Muad'Dib.
Right. Like, What a choice. And he plays it so well. He's such a good actor. And you felt every bit of I've been beaten on his face.
I think that they did a good job at showing like one kind of him being a very reserved emperor. I think that they did a good job at showing him as kind of a petty emperor in like a number of his interactions, whether some of them were with Irulan or with Baron Harkonnen or with Paul, whenever they're talking about Leto. And like you were saying, like the moment where like he kind of is doing the calculus and like realizes I'm fucked. It's pretty good. Like he does a great job of conveying a lot with relatively little.
With his face, just his face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The last scene in this movie I want to talk about that really made me realize I was watching something unbelievable is the scene towards it's in the third act.
Mm-hmm.
When Paul decides to fully become Lisan Al Gaib.
Sure.
And he goes into like the giant tribal dungeon.
Yeah.
And like breaks the rules, but he can because motherfucker, I'm Lisan Al Gaib.
Yeah.
And that was fucking powerful. The whole thing, the acting, the score, the fucking way it was shot, the lighting.
Zendaya smacking his ass.
It was so good.
Yeah.
The brief looks you got at each of the faces of the characters, mm-hmm. who you know what they're thinking because the movie hasn't been shy of telling you all the way through.
Right. Yeah. You know that Zendaya's Chani is not for this.
Yeah.
You know that Stilgar is feeling the I fucking told you all who this mm-hmm. motherfucker was the whole time and you didn't fucking believe me. Like the dog caught the car for Stilgar.
Yeah.
He got it. It is that scene alone demands I see the movie again.
Yeah.
I think the scene in my mind that does that for me and probably will forever for all time is the like sphere, like the silver sphere that is the Emperor's ship. And then all of the atomics going off in the background with Paul looking at it. That will probably be the reason why I continue to watch this movie for now until the end of time. That's fucking incredible.
It is. It is incredible. It's a remake inspired by a French madman's attempt to adapt a really good book. And I hope the property is left where it is after this third installment for a very, very long time. I know all things come around again, but
I'd love to see somebody's future crackpot attempt at it. Like, sure. Hell yeah. I think that this is one of those stories that like every 20 or 30 years, somebody that's just shit wild and crazy enough that's out there should give a go at it.
There's enough of a resurgence in animation that's happening right now, even as they're closing animation studios around the world. That one of the things that Jodorowsky ends the documentary with is saying, you know, I'm perfectly happy with how things have turned out. I've made my comic books. I've done whatever. But if somebody wanted to take this script and turn it into an animated movie, you could do that now. The technology exists now. It didn't really exist when I was doing this. You could do it and you could do it right. And it's all right here, frame by frame.
Wow.
I want to see the inevitable production of Dune as told by some sort of artificial intelligence prompt, some generative AI, just to see
because he's the Kwisatz Haderach, he's made of a bunch of lines.
Yeah, and just to see how many times, like how much power could we generate using Frank Herbert's corpse spinning in its grave? I feel like the answer is, I think we could achieve perpetual Herbert. I think we could do
that.
It.
Is the show title.
Achieving Perpetual Herbert, or just right. Perpetual Herbert?
Achieving Perpetual Herbert.
Excellent.
Well, on that note,
I hope I know that this is a hard left from the shows we normally do. We like doing these. We like doing these. We're going to do more. Not going to end with plugs or anything because we didn't last time, I don't think. But I just want to, if you listen to this and you want us to go deeper and more super niche, as a Canadian lawyer once told us, tell us and let us know what. I don't even mind if you pick a topic and we got to experience it for the first time. Let us know what you think. We would we like doing this. And tune in next week for cum jokes and stuff.
Test is simple.